25 years earlier. Part 3. Komak's lightsaber flew from his belt to his hand, igniting the second he touched it, which was very nearly too late. The giant white serpent slithered toward them at incredible speed, a fine spray of salt marking its way like the wake of a ship. Its mouth opened wide, revealing three huge fangs and a throat already rippling in anticipation of prey. As soon as his blue blade illuminated, it was joined by another, Master Laritz, and two white ones. Komak had wondered whether it was really necessary to have a two-bladed lightsaber, whether maybe Orla wasn't just showing off. Faced with the serpent's fangs, however, he could see the appeal of an extra blade. In the very second the serpent struck, all three Jedi attacked at once. Komak from one side, Master Laret from another, and Orla from top and bottom simultaneously. The serpent had no chance. It was dead almost within the same second. However, its weight and momentum sent it barreling forward, knocking Komak and Orla onto their backs before it skidded to a permanent halt with its head at the very mouth of the cave. "Okay," Orla said, panting as she clambered to her feet and they all switched off their lightsabers. "Rule one, don't ignore the local myths if those myths are trying to warn you." She pointed toward the carving of the serpent. Komak nodded. He felt foolish and angry with himself for having let his master down.
"Master Simix assigned me the legends reading for a reason. I thought they were merely stories, background that might inform us a little, so I didn't pay enough attention."
The stories had indeed spoken of serpents a long ago goddess had banished to the planet's moons. Why hadn't he reflected on the fact that most legends were rooted in some truth? It didn't matter that much, really. The serpent was dead and no longer a threat. His mistake had not cost them, yet Komak remained haunted. Probably that was because he couldn't help seeing the faint resemblance between this creature and the Philithar, most specifically to Master Simix. Some masters were stern and severe. Some were remote. Some continually challenged their Padawans to defend every opinion, every action, every thought. All approaches could be successful in molding excellent Jedi Knights. Yet Komak had always been grateful for a master who was kind. Now Simix was gone, and they'd left his body behind as though it were nothing.
"It is nothing," Komak reminded himself. "Crude matter. Master Simix is one with the Force."
Those thoughts helped, but only so much. He was left with the hard knowledge that he'd ignored Master Simix about the legends, that he'd carelessly neglected his duty to keep his master safe, that he'd gotten his master killed. All the while, Master Laret's head had been bowed and her eyes shut. She was renowned for her ability to find paths with the Force, and it appeared she'd done so again when she said,
"The caves form a network beneath the planetoid's surface. It is logical to assume that the Directorate has hidden the hostages somewhere within this network, and the Force tells me they are not far away." "Then let's go," said Orla.
Already Master Laret had closed her eyes and was reaching out through the Force to see if any other giant serpents or other similarly unfriendly wildlife might be lurking within the tunnels. Komak did the same.
"Nothing close," he thought. "But that's not the same as nothing."
The next time Isomer sent minions to prepare a hideout, he'd make sure he sent people with some sense of comfort. Yes, the caves were all but impregnable to anyone who didn't have in-depth surveys on hand, which Isomer did, and he'd wiped many droid memories to ensure no one outside the Directorate could say the same. But it was cold down there, dark and cramped, and the fool humans who'd chosen that spot hadn't considered that the top of the cave came too low for the comfort of a Lasat. Isomer was tired of being hunched over, tired of the weary hostages huddled in one corner, tired of waiting for this operation to end. Already the governments of Arano and Irem had taken the first inevitable steps, offering ransom for their stolen royalty, ineptly investigating the kidnapping, and following the false trails Isomer had left for them, making clumsy public appeals for calm that had only panicked their citizens more, and asking for the help of the Jedi. As the Hutts had explained, the greater activity between the Republic and that area of space made it inevitable that some planet or other would turn to the Jedi in a crisis. By creating a crisis at the right time and place, Isomer and the Directorate could ensure that the Jedi rescue mission would fail horribly. Both rescuers and hostages would, by the end, be very messily dead. The Jedi Order would mourn its lost knights. These planets and all their neighbors would realize neither the Republic nor the Jedi could help them. Then nothing would stand in the way of the enslavers' bounties. Planets would instead turn on other planets, on their own subcultures or non-dominant sentient species, offering up people to enslave in the hopes it would keep them from being enslaved themselves. Fear would triumph, and Isomer would profit. One of the guards barged into the inner chamber, salt dusting his cloak. In the corner, both Thandeka and Castle flinched.
"Lord Isomer," the guard said. "In the ship, we found the dead body of the Jedi."
Too easy. Isomer narrowed his golden eyes.
"How many Jedi did you find?"
Just the one, Lord Isomer. A Philithar. No one else was with..."
"Fool!"
Isomer growled.
"They would not have sent only one Jedi on this mission!"
The lieutenant pleaded.
"But we saw no tracks, no signs that anyone escaped."
"You did not see them because the Jedi are cleverer than you. They know how to conceal themselves. Others must have survived and escaped. Find them and eliminate them now!"
The guards scurried out. Isomer, in a fouler temper than before, coiled in his chair and stroked his claws over the hilt of his blaster. He hoped they'd get to the end of this soon, because he was in the mood to slaughter someone, anyone. A glorious battle with a Jedi would be preferable, but merely executing the hostages would do. If it weren't for the Jedi's vaunted mental abilities, the potential that they might have sensed the absence of the hostages, Isomer would have killed them already. In the corner, Thandeka's eyes met Castle's in mutual dread. Castle whispered,
"I hope the Jedi find us soon. You put more faith in the Republic and their wizards than I do."
Thandeka said,
"That's funny."
It was the first time there had been any edge in his voice, any hint that their worlds were enemies.
"Seeing as how Iram's the one that begged for their help, I doubt it."
Surely Dima would have had more pride, Thandeka thought, then imagined she were the one safely at home while Dima was in danger. Thandeka would have stopped at nothing to get her queen back. She would have pleaded for help from any who might give it, even the Republic, even the Jedi. Still, pride made her add,
"You can't know that."
Castle sighed, the spark of animosity already extinguished.
"No, I suppose I can't. It's just strange to think of turning to the Republic when we've always guarded against them, well, swallowing us whole. Maybe we shouldn't have thought of it like that."
She leaned back against the wall and wished for painkiller to treat her throbbing head.
"Maybe we should have thought about having someone to turn to in times of crisis. About not standing alone. Our two worlds have always stood apart from each other,"
Castle pointed out. But he sounded thoughtful. Well, thoughtful for him anyway.
"Not even the history books know why. It's just tradition. That's not actually a very good reason to do anything, is it?"
Thandeka looked at Isomer and at the heavy blaster holstered on his side.
"It doesn't seem like it at the moment."
anything that would have kept them out of this situation, even friendship with Erino, would have been better than sitting there with her wrists bound, waiting to die. Orla had thought Komak and Master Larrett were probably being paranoid about the threat of more snakes. How many giant serpents could eke out an existence on a nearly dead rock in space? Answer? At least five so far. Fangs slashed down at Orla, backed as she was against the cave wall. Nearby, the vibrating hum of Master Larrett and Komak's lightsabers told her they were fighting off the fourth of the serpents that had attacked them so far, but number five there was all hers. Unfortunately, she was wedged in a place that didn't allow her to strike, but it didn't allow the serpent to reach her either, by a few centimeters, so she'd take it.
"It doesn't make any sense for you to be here," she muttered at the snake. "How does a carnivorous species manage to live on a moon with almost no other animal life?"
Enough of that. She knew she had a bad habit of looking only at what was logical and sensible, which obscured the fact that the galaxy was neither. Orla centered herself in the Force as best she could. Breathe in, breathe out. Then, as the serpent lunged open-mouthed toward her again, she jabbed her lightsaber straight forward, burying it in the roof of the serpent's mouth. It howl hissed, a ghastly sound. Through the Force, she felt the creature's pain and knew a moment of pity for it, a mere beast that had only been hunting for food.
"I'm sorry," she thought, "but food is not something I ever intend to be."
When the serpent collapsed dead, Orla could see Komak and Master Larrett standing over another dead snake. Komak was breathing hard, and even Master Larrett looked slightly ruffled.
"We're clear for now,"
Orla said.
"Right?"
"I believe so,"
replied Master Larrett. Her expression reflected none of the immense relief Orla felt at the thought of no more snakes. Instead, grave and thoughtful, she moved closer to her Padawan. By now, Orla knew what that meant.
"What did I do?"
she whispered.
"I only acted in self-defense."
"You made no mistakes."
Generally warm and empathetic, Master Larrett always tried to reassure her apprentice. But she also found other things Orla needed to work on. Always.
"Yet today you have repeatedly failed to call upon your full training in combat against non-sapien beings."
"I followed my instincts,"
Orla wanted to say.
"I stayed alive. I won."
Instead, she nodded.
"I'll remember next time."
Master Larrett gave her a rare grin.
"Let's just hope the next time is more than 5 minutes from now, hmm?"
"Definitely,"
Orla agreed. Inside, however, she couldn't stop thinking,
"If the Force speaks to me through my instincts, why can't I listen?"